Welcome to BICOM's Hadean Weekly Podcast. I'm BICOM CEO James Serene. As one of our election specials, I'm delighted to have with us today Dalia Scheinlin, who is the star of the Tel Aviv Review podcast. She's doing election updates regularly for 972 magazine, and she is a polling expert. Dalia, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
So really what I wanted to start off with and for our listeners to understand is, what is the truth around these ideas of, you know, are there more right-wing people in Israel than left-wing? Is the left-wing dead? Is there a consistent central group in Israeli society? Can you put some of the numbers behind that?
Yes, but before I put the numbers behind it, I want to explain why that's a very important beginning question. The way people self-identify, in other words, whether they describe themselves as right, left, or center, is so far the best predictor in surveys for how they will vote in the elections. So when we talk about which party will win, but also which parties, what kind of government they'll form, we need to look at the blocks, as we call them. And there's a block that reflects right-wing voters and right-wing parties, a block that represents centrists and left-wingers, and I consider those a block because those were the parties that were in the opposition in the previous cycle. So it's important to understand these numbers. And when we do ask people, do you consider yourself to be right, moderate right, centrist, moderate left, or left, the responses are very consistent, and the biggest portion goes to people who self-identify as right-wing. So that takes up about 45-46% of all Israeli society. Right now I'm talking about all Israeli adults, Jews and Arabs combined, but not necessarily who votes. Mm-hmm. So let's just start with the overall society. About 45-46% are right-wing, which includes right and moderate right. About 25-28% consider themselves to be centrist, and about 20% consider themselves to be left. So you would say, well, there's almost parity between these blocks, right? If you add the center and the left together, which is what happened in the previous cycle, they have about the same portion as the right. However, when you look at who actually votes in Israeli society, we have the Arab community in Israel voting significantly below the levels of turnout among Jewish society, meaning that they account for roughly 10% of the vote, and 90% of the voters are Jewish, roughly. I'm talking about big approximations here. But therefore, we have to look also at the Jewish breakdown, because it's more heavily weighted in elections for the turnout reasons I just mentioned. And if you look at Jewish society only, you see about 55% who identify as right-wing, whether that's firm right or moderate right. A similar percentage of centrist, 25 to 30%, similar, I mean, to the general society, if you look at Jews and Arabs together. But the left wing drops down to about 15% on average. You know, it can be a range of 14-16%. And so what you see is, when you put those two blocks together, the right is significantly bigger than the center and the left combined, which is exactly why we see the kind of coalition we had in the previous government, which had 66 parliamentary members versus 54, if I'm not mistaken. But the general breakdown in all surveys is about that. In other words, about a 12-point gap, a 12-seat gap I'm talking about, out of 120, in favor of a right-wing bloc versus the center and the left. Now, the reason why we have to look carefully at those numbers is to understand that until those numbers significantly change, it's very hard to see how there's a significant change in the dynamics of the next coalition, even if the parties reconfigure themselves as they have been this week. For the most part, Israelis have a pretty clear sense of which side of the map each party is on. So yes, there's been a lot of drama today because Benny Gantz's new party merged with Yair Lapid's party. But Israelis are pretty clear on which side of the which block they belong to.
So that explains. I was going to say, but that explains why you know, Benny Gantz and his campaign ads and a lot of his speeches, he's very much trying to appeal to a sort of soft right or moderate right audience. He's talking about his military record. He's talking about how tough he's going to be. He's very much talking to a potentially small group of moderate right voters who may, for whatever reason, decide to change in this election.
Well, that's really true. I mean, you know, again, there's not going to be much of a possibility to shift the nature of the next government without a change in those moderate right voters who might consider defecting blocks. However, there's another sort of important it's not exactly a nuance, but it's a point of fact that you should keep in mind, which is that moderate right is not so small. Okay, if you look at the total right as 45-46% of all society, over 50%, 53-55% of Jews, that breaks down pretty evenly between firm right and moderate right. In other words, they're about a quarter of the voting population. That's a lot.
So how much of the right, a moderate right, then, would you say?
That's what I'm saying. About half of the right moderates, roughly. Maybe a little bit less, let's say, you know, it could be 20, 30, but close to half. And this is, again, quite consistent in most of my polls. And, you know, there is a very significant difference between them. There's a reason why they identify all of them as right wing. But, you know, consistently in all of the policy positions that we test, whether it's the two-state solution, religion and state, you know, national issues, national identity issues, they are more moderate than the firm right, exactly what you would expect. Israelis know what they're talking about when they self-identify at every point in the scale. So the question is, how many of those would consider, A, shifting parties all, B, shifting parties across blocks? And that is where you get to the small portion that you accurately pointed out, because, you know, it's always a small portion of people who change their vote to begin with. In Israel, maybe it's higher than in some places because our parties keep changing. But that's where we're all guessing. And I imagine it is, you know, quite a small portion who would consider changing blocks. You're right that Benny Gantz has reached out to them by what he thinks, I suppose, is the best way of doing it, which is emphasizing how many people he's killed in Gaza, both terrorists that have been assassinated or targeted, I should say, or neighborhoods that have been destroyed, which were the subject of his two of his ad campaigns. They were famous or infamous, depending on your perspective. And he seems to think that that will appeal to the moderate right. And if I was a strategist, I wouldn't be so sure. It seems to be a rather primitive kind of appeal. But he certainly knows that without those people shifting blocks, not only shifting parties, but shifting blocks, there won't be a chance of a different kind of government, even if his party does very well. It could do very well at the expense of labor and merit.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my next question about the truth of, you know, just the vote shifting within the center-left bloc, and no one's really migrating from right to the center. But my question was going to be, you know, there's a picture today on Twitter of three former chiefs of staff of the Israel Defense Forces, Gabi Ashkenazi, Moshe Yaalon, Benny Gantz, with Yair Lapid. Does that kind of unity by three such former senior figures in the IDF, does that appeal to that moderate right? And how much does that force people, do you think, to think, you know, will I still vote Bibi? Or is that allegiance to Bibi and that allegiance to the Likud, which has been so solid in the polls all the way through, always getting somewhere between 28 and sort of 32 seats, is that going to change? Is that going to have an effect?
Well, you're asking me to, you know, make a prediction about something where we really, it's a bit of uncharted territory. We haven't seen any new polls that actually test what that, you know, banding together of generals or ex-generals does to the voter. All we've seen are polls that test it hypothetically. And up until now, it's been hypothetical. And I always caution against, you know, placing too much interpretation on polls that ask voters how they might feel in a hypothetical situation of the future. Now the situation has happened, but there haven't been any new polls. As you point out, Likud has been very stable. However, political analysis and instinct, which I can say with some authority after working on five election campaigns here, says that Netanyahu is facing certain vulnerabilities. Okay, obviously there's the question of the Attorney General and whether he'll decide to indict him and what that will mean. But in terms of his political positioning, Netanyahu has had the exclusive territory of being Mr. Security. He has had the exclusive right to that brand in Israel. He is Mr. Security, the right, no matter how much they say, oh, he's annoying and everybody likes to sit around and criticize him at the dinner table. The fact is, the right wing feels safer with Netanyahu. However, that becomes not such an exclusive image when you're facing down three different ex-generals. One of them was a recent chief of staff. Two of them were recent chiefs of staff. So, you know, you can't claim that he now towers above everybody in the same way. And anybody who's voting just based on security will, you know, let's say you need a voter who is both skeptical of Bibi, annoyed by the corruption, ongoing corruption charges, tired of his populist leadership, but might have continued voting for him for security reasons, who now would reconsider and possibly vote for Gantz. But that's a very small subsection, because I personally, from what I've seen of the Israeli electorate, and specifically people in the center-right and further-right, is that those who support Netanyahu see him also as a statesperson. They see him as a very savvy politician, and the one area left where Netanyahu has an exclusive, strong image in the Israeli mind is his foreign policy, his statesmanship, his ability to speak American, and he even knows how to speak Trump. And I think that they see him constantly on overdrive, building relationships with new countries, shaking leaders' hands, and he is very reticent on saying what his end game is with the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but he never fails to mention how important it is that he's opened up relations with Chad, and that he's close with Narendra Modi from India, and that he has, you know, held meetings with Putin, even though we saw that he postponed a meeting with Putin this week. But even that is a strange sign of confidence. You know, he knows he can postpone a meeting with Putin and then possibly, I suppose, hold it some other time. I mean, people see him as somebody who really can maneuver the global situation. And so I don't, honestly, you know, it becomes harder to see that people were voting for him only for the security image. It's as if he held an exclusive claim to security in the past, but people weren't voting for him exclusively for that reason. And that's why I still don't have strong evidence to see why people would leave Likud en masse when they've been so stalwart about supporting him in the polls ever since the 2015 election.
So what about another question? And I'm asking you to speculate again, but bear with me. So if the Attorney General says he's going to begin an indictment process pending a hearing, and he makes that announcement, you know, in the next week or so, and you actually hear the Attorney General say that, and then there's going to be this leak of all this material from the investigation. We don't know what exactly it's going to be, whether there'll be Netanyahu's own words saying things that are incriminating. But still, if the Attorney General comes out and says it, do you think that will turn off some of those moderate Likud voters?
Again, it's certainly a gamble to try to predict what will happen, but the only thing I can say as an analyst is that based on previous evidence, I'm not convinced that there would be a mass defection, because the only thing we've even had that comes close to this situation was the recommendations by the police in February that he be indicted on two of the cases, and then a later recommendation back in December that he be indicted on a third case. And what happened after February was that Netanyahu's polls rose. They were hovering in the mid-20s at that point, 25 to 28 seats. They then went over 30 seats and basically stayed over 30 seats, and now they're averaging about 30 seats. Yeah. So that was the case for almost all of 2018, starting just a few weeks after those police recommendations. So unless the recommendations have a dramatic twist, I mean, even within the idea of the Attorney General recommendation, there is a range of the severity. There are three cases open against him. We don't know if he will recommend indictment on all of them, and if he will recommend indictment on the toughest, on the most severe charges. He might be charged with the more minimum charges. And I think it's also worth keeping in mind that the case that most people here think is most likely to damage Netanyahu is not even on the table, and that's the investigation into the submarine deals, which is case 3000. It's not even currently at a stage where there's even a recommendation about whether to indict him.
To the future.
So it's hard to, you know, so we don't know, you know, we could always be surprised. I have to hedge this question because I don't want to be one of those pollsters or analysts who people say afterwards, well, she got it wrong. How could I possibly stand that? But in truth, I have to go on is the evidence that we have from the past year, which is that based on the current cases and the current dynamics that seem to be leading towards an indictment, so far they have not damaged his poll numbers.
Yeah. So my other question was going to be about the this merger between Jewish Home and what we say in English, Jewish Power, that Prime Minister Netanyahu has been behind the scenes sort of trying to pull together so that those votes are not lost, so that you know, these small parties that don't get the 3.25% threshold, they don't get into the Knesset, the votes disappear. Yeah. He wanted these two small parties to unite, and this has been very controversial because the Jewish Power Party, some of the key activists and leaders are supporters of Rabbi Meir Kahan, and the Kach Party, which is a banned terrorist organization in many countries, has a racist ideology. Do you think that this will in some way turn off some of those voters, or does it not really break through to them because it's a bit of a niche story?
No, I don't think it's a niche story. I think it is an important story for the right, but I think that some of the analysts are getting it wrong. In other words, everybody's talking about how interesting it is that now there's a consolidation. But the fact is, we still have two rather than one party on the national religious right. In other words, last time we had Jewish Home, which was, you know, also a combination of parties, but it was one list running. And now we have two lists running because we have this new merger. It's a kind of a new old merger. It's not really that new in terms of Israeli history. And the new right, as they're calling themselves, Naftali Bennett and the other chickhead. And so their vote is still somewhat divided. But I think you raise a very good question, which is a valuable question. I don't think we had the answer yet. The fact that these parties are considered very extreme, even I'm looking at headlines in the right-wing press calling them extremists, not necessarily in a bad way, but even the right admits that they're extremists. And for one thing, they were not banned only in other countries. I mean, Kahana's party, when at the time, was actually banned from running in Israel due to explicitly racist and violent attitudes by the Central Election Committee at the time, or I think it was even upheld by the Supreme Court. So even Israel in its past has admitted that the attitudes represented by these people historically have not been legitimate in the Israeli political scene. So the question is, are there people who would have been Likud voters or other parties considered on the moderate right, or even parties who would vote for the new right, Bennett and Shaked, but people who are not with the far right, who will say, if I support any party in the right-wing bloc, I'm going to have Michael Ben-Ari as a minister in the next government, who's one of the figures who represents these parties. I don't want that, therefore I'm going to defect to the center bloc, which is what somebody on the right would say. They would never tell themselves they're defecting to a center-left bloc. And I think that it's a possibility that I've been discussing with other analysts this morning. I don't have any idea of how common that attitude will be. I cannot say. But I would say that it is a possibility that there are some people on the moderate right who are saying, this has gone too far. Mm. I'm a right-winger in terms of security. I'm a right-winger in terms of Jewish national identity being, central to Israel. And maybe these are voters who even supported the nation-state law. But are repulsed by what those parties represent and maybe don't want to be part of a bloc, no matter which party they support in the bloc, that puts them into ministerial positions. But I cannot say how many of those there are.
Yeah. Final question, but before you leave us, the thing that often leads to, an election result that perhaps people weren't expecting is this sense of a need for change, that the current situation is no good. It's not going well. A lot of the indicators, if you're the average Israeli, unemployment is low, the economy is doing well, how bad are things? Why would I change? Do you think there is that thirst for change in this election? Can you feel it?
There is a power. The country is very divided. It would be a mistake to look at the entire Israeli society and say there's a shared feeling. Like America, we are talking about an extremely divided country like Britain. I don't have to remind you what it means to live in a deeply divided society with two major worldviews that are competing and almost zero sum. There are certainly more than two, but I mean, there are two basic camps, people who, within their variations, can pretty much place which side of which camp they're in. And therefore, I would not talk about them as one people in that sense. And in terms of who thinks there must be a change at all costs, that's everybody who's voting for the center and left party.
Yeah.
So let's talk primarily about the center, since they are kind of seen as the rising force anyway. Those are people who say some of them are associated with the right. I mean, people on Gantz's list, like Yoaz Hendel and Tzvika Hauser. Well, these are people who, and Yalon himself, of course, former defense minister in Netanyahu's government. I mean, these are people who are associated with the right, saying there has to be a change. Netanyahu has to go. He's been around too long. And the question is whether they represent a real change of outlook and policy, or whether they're simply proposing a different leader to conduct a similar policy. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what they are trying to leave murky, precisely to go full circle back to your early question, so that they can pull in some voters from the moderate right, but also be seen as the representative of all those centrists and maybe even some center and moderate left people who would vote for them because they simply want to change Netanyahu so badly to replace him. On the right, people see things very differently. The polls are entirely split on this when we ask the question about what direction is the country going in? Are things going well or are things going poorly? It's a very standard question. It's a very general question. And on the right, people are sitting pretty. We have majorities who say that things are going just fine. The country's not perfect. There could be fewer social gaps and lower cost of living, but no country's really solved that. All things being equal, they feel like the country's doing pretty well and they're proud of its achievements. And those are the kind of people who are essentially preservationists. Now, what's interesting about that is that Netanyahu is running very, very powerfully on a fear campaign. He's trying to make people who feel essentially comfortable extremely fearful. And he's portraying, on the one hand, how wonderful his achievements have been, while simultaneously trying to portray that it's all at risk. It's all precarious and fragile and could fall apart entirely. The country could collapse if there is a left-wing government, which is exactly what he's calling Gantz and now Lapid.
Mm. Well, that's his worldview, isn't it? It's all very precarious, and we've got to be strong. Otherwise, it's all going to fall apart. That's how he sees history.
You could certainly argue whether that is really his worldview or whether it's his political strategy. But in Netanyahu's case, it's, I would say, a fair guess to say that it might not be that different. In other words, political strategy and worldview might really be one and the same for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Dalia, thank you so much for your time. We will leave it there. I hope we can speak again before the election, but that's been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.